Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. It's Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2023. Now, if you've just joined me, I've just had a very special guest, Senator Alex Antic, on the line. We talked about many things: Davos, the WEF, Australian energy policy, freedom, democracy. If you missed the show, you can catch it tomorrow on at tntradio.live. Right, next up, we have a very special guest, a freedom fighter who doesn't let go of her grip once she sets her sight on a target. Freedom is at the core of her being, and democracy is the front line in her battle with the powerful few who are acting against our best interests. Do you know what? The only time I've ever felt regret that I'm no longer a member of the European Parliament is when I've been watching Christine Anderson and other MPs such as Ivan Sinčić, Virginie Giron, Francesco Donato, Rob Roos, and Christiane Therese. Watching them on stage challenging power in the way that they have been doing makes me very jealous, if I'm totally honest, because I am also a freedom fighter and freedom is also at the core of my being. So next up, I'm going to have Christine Anderson, MEP. Christine is a German member of the European Parliament and AfD party member. There's so much I want to ask her, and I'll try my best to get through all of this, but I want to find out why she entered politics and why she's so passionate about freedom. We'll also be talking about her new documentary, Fighting for Freedom. And I want to understand what Christine thinks democracy is and what she thinks has gone wrong. I also want to ask her about COVID policy and vaccines in her home country of Germany, critical identity theory, the media, censorship. There's just too many topics to cover, but I will try my best to get through as much as possible. In a moment, we'll go over to Dee Dee Denslow for some of the big stories of the day. But first of all, I want to talk about why I entered politics. Now, growing up, I grew up in Plymouth. So Darren, obviously, Dee Dee Denslow is from Plymouth as well. And I grew up with a healthy distrust and questioning of authority. I always wanted to know why we did things the way we do, and who are these people telling us what to do? Now, growing up in the 1980s and early 1990s, I was a raver, and along came the Criminal Justice Bill in the UK. Now, part of that legislation said that it was illegal for more than four people to gather together on a street corner or wherever and listen to repetitive music without the permission of the government. And I just thought, what the hell is this? Who are these people to tell us that we cannot do that? And then there was the poll tax, a tax on being alive. Well, I didn't pay it and they chased me for a few years. And then, of course, we all know how that ended. They dropped the whole thing after the riots. I really didn't understand the rat race growing up, the 9 to 5. I thought, what the hell is that all about? I would be carrying my record box or bag on a Monday morning after partying for the weekend and watching everybody getting into their little boxes with wheels on, going off to the jobs and doing the same thing every single day. I really didn't understand it. But then I got caught up in all of that. I went to university when I was 28, and then I got a proper job. And I didn't lose that sense of questioning, but it kind of got put to the back of my mind. But that was until after the referendum. I mean, Brexit itself, I didn't follow European politics. I was never bothered about immigration. I voted to leave because I want the politicians who make the laws that I have to follow accountable to me, not away in some other faraway country where I can't vote them out. But the thing that got me was when it looked like the UK government was going to try and overturn the democratic vote. That, for me, was too much. I've always believed that democracy was an illusion. So as well as being wanting to do something about that, I also saw it as an opportunity. Because, you know, up until that point, if you told people that democracy was an illusion, they would say, where is your tinfoil hat? And yet, suddenly, the curtain was pulled back and it was all apparent for everybody to see. And suddenly, we knew we could see the enemy. And for me, that was too much of an opportunity to miss. And so I resigned from my career in the civil service and stood in the European elections. And of course, then I got elected and I was in the European Union. So that was kind of my journey into politics. I didn't go in there for a career. In fact, actually, I went in there to put myself out of a job. And that's the kind of people that we need in politics these days. Right. Okay. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. You can then listen to us anywhere at any time, and you can also catch up on all your favorite shows that have already passed. My name's James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, Darren, Ghislaine Maxwell makes a claim about Jeffrey Epstein's death. What's that all about, Darren?
Before I start, the hardcore never die, James. I didn't realise that you grew up in Plymouth, and a lot of good people come from Plymouth, yeah? The disgraced socialite says she doesn't believe the notorious sex trafficker committed suicide in his cell. Convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell claims her partner in crime and ex-boyfriend, the notorious Jeffrey Epstein, was murdered in his Manhattan jail cell in August 2019 while he was away in trial. In a jailhouse interview with Talk TV's Jeremy Kyle Live, what was she doing talking to him? Or what was she doing talking to anybody? She's a convicted sex trafficker in jail, but she was talking to Jeremy Kyle, which aired on Monday. Maxwell stated that she didn't believe the official narrative that the disgraced financier had committed suicide after he was found hanging in his cell just a month after his arrest. I believe that he was murdered. I was shocked, she said. Then I wondered how it had happened, because as far as I was concerned, he was going to appeal, and I'm sure he was covered under the non-prosecution agreement. Epstein's death has officially been ruled a suicide, and the Justice Department has said it found no signs of foul play. That's because all the videotape, the videos were off. There was no evidence to suggest what had happened. So, of course, there were no signs of foul play following a 2-year investigation. However, many still remain skeptical after it was revealed that video cameras covering Epstein's cell malfunctioned and the two guards assigned to his cell falsified records stating that they had monitored the sex offender on the night of his death. Later in the interview, Maxwell also commented on her personal relationship with Epstein, stating that she wishes she had never met the financier and that she didn't know he was so awful when the pair were in a relationship. So I don't know why she was speaking to Jeremy Kyle, although he is a bit of a bear baiter and does like to have, you know, he had that infamous program where he brought in, you know, the less fortunate of our society and embarrassed them on stage. But what was she doing? She's supposed to be in a maximum security prison. She's not supposed to, you know, she's in jail. She shouldn't be communicating on talk radio with anybody, although she is welcome on TNT, I suppose, because it would be an interesting conversation to have with her. She's just stating the obvious, that Epstein was most likely murdered, which is why the video cameras weren't working, James.
Yeah, as always, Darren, I think I've got more questions than I have answers. Yes, I find that was the first thing I thought. I thought that was very, very odd to hear on Talk TV. You know, when she's locked up in prison, I wonder who knew that was going on and why she was allowed to do that interview. But I think, you know, the wider story about Maxwell, I mean, you know, this whole Epstein story is about offences against women. It's about the trafficking of human beings, all women. We don't know the list of visitors to the Epstein Island, but I think more importantly, it's a woman. It's the only one that has actually ended up with any in prison. Obviously, Epstein was put in prison and then he apparently committed suicide. I think there's a lot of questions over that, which Maxwell has stated. But isn't it odd, isn't it, that it's a woman that ends up in prison, and yet we know there's a list of all these visitors to the Epstein Island, and there's no investigation whatsoever into who these people are and why they were visiting the island. Again, more questions than there are answers. And like all of these stories, the public are distracted from asking these questions by the mainstream media. And they are important questions because this goes to the very, very heart of some of the most powerful people in the world. Bill Gates, Bill Clinton, the list goes on and on and on. Okay, Darren, well, listen, thank you very, very much. You're on at 1 o'clock again today.
Yeah, I'm on at 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. I've got Lawrence Eastman and Nick Ashcroft on the show with me. James, enjoy your conversation with Christine Anderson. I will be listening intently to what she has to say. So all the best. And remember, the hardcore never die.
They certainly don't. They certainly don't. Okay, thank you, Darren. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with Christine Anderson, MEP.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
Doctors at Duke University, where Yulia has been awaiting a kidney transplant, have told her parents they will not give her a new kidney unless she is vaccinated against COVID, even though Yulia has already had and recovered from COVID. What's interesting about this story is that Chrissy Hicks, she had some audio of the doctors explaining why they would not give Yulia the kidney transplant she so needs. And what was interesting about it was the absolute lack of empathy and humanity in the voice of those doctors. And it's something that I've come to fully have taken on board during COVID, that medicine now seems to be kind of medicine practiced by guidelines and rules, right? It's not directed at the individual patient. It's practiced by guidelines and rules. I don't understand how people so committed, or allegedly so committed, to saving and nurturing human life could make a decision like this and tolerate a policy like this.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook
has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
90% of parents still say no thanks to COVID-19 shots for their young children. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Freeman Report with me, James Freeman. Right, next up, I have a very special freedom fighter. I have Christine Anderson on the line. Hello, Christine.
Hello there. How are you?
Christine, I'm very, very good, Christine, and I am absolutely super excited to have you on the show. I think the work that you're doing in the European Parliament is excellent. So, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. I'm honored to have you on the show. So we've all watched across the world you on our screens many times over the past couple of years with your European colleagues. telling the world what is going on at the heart of the EU. You know, I was watching your documentary last night, Fighting for Freedom, and it reminded me of the dressing down that you gave to Justin Trudeau when he visited the parliament. I guess my first question is, do you ever feel any fear?
Oh, of course I do. I mean, I would be stupid not to be fearful of, you know, not to be fearful of anything. But telling things like they are and confronting a prime minister with what I believe to be true and what I believe where he failed massively, that's not one of my fears. No.
Yeah, and it was fantastic what you said. I mean, one of the things I noticed watching it over again last night is the cameras didn't show Trudeau's face as you were giving him a dressing down. Did you catch a glimpse of him? How do you think? What did you think he thought of that?
No, unfortunately, I didn't. But it was just like, I mean, I just could not let this stand without, you know, at least commenting on the treacherous things that he had done in Canada to the freedom truckers, and you know, practically treating them as though they were the worst terrorists you can imagine. And I just wanted to make it a point. And when I did learn something in life, then is do not rely on others to make a point. Do not rely on others to do what you think needs to be done. You need to make sure that you do it. That's the only way to guarantee someone said something. So, yeah. But fortunately, I wasn't the only one. There were a few other colleagues who also raised their voice and let Trudeau know what they thought about him. So.
Yeah, and when I introduced you at the top of the hour, I admitted that, you know, I have no regrets of not being an MEP anymore. I'd actually joined to put myself out of a job. But the one time I have had regrets that I'm not in the European Parliament is when I watch you and your colleagues holding power to account. So thank you for doing that. Now, watching your documentary last night, which is on YouTube, by the way, if you search up Christine Anderson, it is Fighting for Freedom. I loved your backstory about your father and why you got into politics. And tell us a little bit about his story during the war and what happened to him.
Well, okay, so he was drafted when he was 16 years old. It was, you know, towards the end of the war, and they were quite desperate. They just took, you know, just about anyone, even kids. Like I said, he was 16 years old. He was drafted and he fought on the front line in Hungary when the war ended. So he made his way back, trying not to run into any Russian troops. So he actually really did go out of his way so he would avoid Russian troops, because one thing he knew, if anything happened, if I have to be a prisoner of war, please do not let it be the Russians. So he did end up as a POW, but with Americans. So he was released in the end of 46, I think. And he came home and he realized that now I'm sitting in communism, and that just didn't sit well with him. So he started raising his voice and started asking uncomfortable questions to an extent that they actually approached him and, you know, kind of invited him to join the party. I mean, he was just a farmer's boy from a very, very small town. But he was the first, the only one actually attending a secondary school in the next bigger city, which was Erfurt. So he did kind of have an education, and they were promised him, you know, we sent you off to Moscow, to the party university, you can study there, whatever. And he just looked at them, well, no, not with you guys, you know. So it did get him into trouble, obviously. So he was arrested in spring of 1950. He was arrested by the Russians. He was interrogated in Russian, and he was tried in Russian. So the verdict was in Russian, and he had no idea what was even going on. I mean, he kind of did get, they were accusing him of anti-Soviet espionage, which was completely bollocks. So he was sentenced not knowing what he had been sentenced to. He only found that out once he reached the prison called Bautzen. The people call it the Yellow Misery, and that's actually what it was. And there was another prisoner who could read Russian, and he translated for him that he had, in fact, been sentenced to 25 years of hard labor. And now, being a young man, he told us later on then, being 22 years old, you know, you add 25 to that. And back in those days, you're practically an old man. So he was pretty much, my life's over, you know. So, but luckily he was released after 5 years. And he did not know until the very day he was actually released that he is going home. And, but no matter what they tried to do to him, no matter how they tried to break him, he still would not shut up after having been released. So he just continued. He picked up right where he had left it. And the second arrest was going to take place in 59. But that time he had been warned by someone, and he decided to flee the country. My mother and my two older sisters, who were born at the time, she followed him 2 years later in May of 61. So that's the reason why I actually was born and raised in Western Germany.
Well, you're definitely your father's daughter, Christine, because, you know, and thank God you are,
very
you know,
much
in terms of
May, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, did you, I mean, is that the reason you went into politics? What was this kind of spark that actually made you say, right, I'm going to stand in the elections?
Well, you know what, looking back, I mean, I've always been interested in politics. And that has, of course, to do with my parents' story coming from, you know, a totalitarian regime, having fled a totalitarian regime. So I was always interested in that. And I remember there was in GDR television, actually, there was a show back then. It was called The Black Channel. And it was hosted by someone who actually lived in West Berlin. But, you know, he did these propaganda shows on for GDR television. And it always fascinated me back then, because what he did is he would show clips from Western television and he would frame it in a way that it fit, you know, the communist agenda, the communist narrative. And it fascinated me even back then as a kid, I was like 10 or 11 years old, how you could, you know, take facts and spin them in any which way you would like. And people actually go for that. But what actually made me go into politics was, it was a pure act of self-defense, because ever since I was eligible to vote, I've been voting for a former Conservative Party and the Liberal Party. So it was the Christian Democrats and the Liberals, and I always got my vote. And I voted this way up until 2005. But the next general elections in 2009, I could no longer vote for either of those parties. And I would have never guessed, but that feeling of a political homelessness, that really got to me. Not to know who is representing your views anymore, that really got to me. So in 2013 was March, I, you know, heard on TV, there's some new party, you know, in the process of being founded. And there were, you know, skeptics of the EU, Euro-skeptical, you know, the currency and all of that. And I was like, wait a minute, whoa, this sounds good. So I turned off my TV and researched that party, and I decided to, yeah, that's it. But this time I'm not going to be just a bystander. I will get active and I will help these guys, you know, get things going. And so, like I said, it was a pure act of self-defense.
Yeah. And, you know, I've asked myself a lot of times, how far would I go to defend democracy? And I think, I mean, nobody actually knows until they're tested, do they? But I am absolutely steadfast that I will not back down if it means arrest. I mean, how far would you go to defend what you believe is right, Christine?
Well, I will do whatever it takes to defend. And actually, at this point, we are talking about taking back freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And as I said in that one speech, I mean, when it came down to the possible, you know, mRNA shot mandates, I told the EU Commission, you can do whatever you want, you know, put me in jail, lock me up. I do not care, but I will never consent to being given that shot, that mRNA shot. So, yeah, that's what it takes. Then that's what it takes. Because the thing is this, I mean, eventually they will have to release me from prison, but I have no way ever to get that mRNA substance out of my body ever again. Once it's in there, it's in there. You know, and that's why I always kind of laugh at the people that accuse me of, you know, wearing a tinfoil hat. Well, yeah, guess what? I can take off my tinfoil hat anytime I please. But how do you plan on getting that substance out of your body? How will you do that?
Exactly. Exactly. And I do feel sorry for people that do have regret in taking that now. Right, Christine, don't go anywhere. We're just going to take a quick short break for the news headlines. And then after the break, I want to talk about your new documentary. My name is James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
News doesn't stop breaking, and we don't take a break from covering it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Morocco has slammed an EU resolution against press freedoms in the country, calling it an unacceptable attack on the nation's sovereignty. Mystery surrounds a spike in unexplainable deaths across Britain, with national statistics showing the country reporting 3,000 more deaths than usual every week. And a cloud of corruption continues to hang over Ukraine after a wave of ministers were either sacked or forced to quit their posts on Tuesday.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report. And on the line, I have Christine Anderson. So, Christine, recently you've made a documentary film called Fighting for Freedom. Tell us a little bit about why you made it and what the film is about.
Well, that one day a young man showed up at my office asking to talk to me. And he is the one that actually made that film. And he approached me and suggested to me that he was so impressed by my work and the way I just, you know, say it clearly without, you know, fooling around or anything or trying to find words to make it sound all, you know, nice and neat and not using any euphemisms, but saying things like they are. And he was rather impressed with that, so he told me anyway. And he just said, I would love to make a you know, kind of like a documentary about what drives you, what you do and all of this. And he presented me with a concept, and I thought, yeah, that really sounds interesting. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, obviously. I've never done that before. But looking at it, I'm actually quite impressed with that young man. It turned out pretty good from what I can say. I was a little concerned that it might come across as, you know, like standoffish, or, you know, she's trying to brag about things or putting herself at the center of attention. But if I don't think that documentary actually does that. So yeah, that's how this all came about. And I'm really glad I did it.
Well, I am too. I watched it last night and I was really impressed. I think you come across really, really well, Christine. I think, you know, your motivations and why you're concerned about what's going on, I thought that all was presented really, really well in the film. Now, there was something that caught my ear in the documentary, and that was when you talked about a conversation with one of my former colleagues, Claire Fox. Can you please tell us about that conversation and what it meant to you?
Yeah. So Claire Fox, she was a member of parliament and she was a member of the Brexit Party. And I came across her in several committee meetings and she was quite outspoken. And I was like, gosh, I mean, really impressive. And, you know, she didn't hold back either. She just, you know, said whatever she felt like saying. And I was really impressed by it, with that. So so we had, you know, talked a couple of times. And so then I learned that she had been, you know, a self-declared Marxist. And that just struck me as odd. And so I, you know, approached her one day and just asked about it. So, I mean, how come, you know, from what you were saying in committee meetings and all of that and your political views? And to me, that doesn't make sense, because in Germany, you have that clear cut narrative. Anyone challenging authority has to be a right winger, you know, and a right winger now is the complete opposite of what a Marxist would be, at least so I'm told. So anyway, and she just looked at me and said, well, you know what, it's no longer about left and right. It's about freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And I was like, and I just looked at her and was like, yeah, thank you for saying that. You are absolutely right. So I really, I was really frantic about the Brexit happening. I was so glad because, you know, someone showed it is possible to leave this madhouse. And, missing out on her, or missing out on Nigel Farage's spectacular speeches he held in plenary. That was like the downside of the Brexit happening. But I think in the picture of the greater good, Brexit was necessary just to show and just to prove, yes, there is a way you can leave this nut house. There is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think also there's a lesson there for the UK in terms of, you know, we decided we didn't want to give away our sovereignty to and outsource our democracy to a third party entity, because now we've got the WHO and we'll talk about that maybe in a minute. And obviously, you know, the kind of power grab going on there at the moment. So I think there are parallels with what's going on now. OK, so the documentary, where can people find it?
Well, like you said, you can go to my YouTube channel. It's on there, and maybe you could be so kind when you post that interview or whatever on your site, just put the link below. But if you just Google it, pretty much Christine Anderson fighting for freedom, you should stumble across it for sure.
Fantastic. And I definitely recommend everybody watch that. Right. Okay. So one of the things that has struck me over the past couple of years is obviously there's a lot been going on around the world. And whilst we've heard bits and pieces from different countries in terms of what's going on with COVID policy and vaccine policy, masks and all the rest of it, I think in particular countries, I've kind of lost touch on what has been going on and where we are right now. So I wonder if you could just give a brief summary of what happened in Germany, how far all of this went, you know, did you have vaccine mandates? And then what's going on now? What you know, are people waking up? Where are you now in your homeland of Germany?
Okay. So what happened in Germany was, pretty much what happened in every single Western democracy in particular. In the beginning, we didn't know what was coming and, you know, they were trying to figure out what to do. But to me, it was it became pretty clear very quickly that these things do not add up. So for one, I was reminded of 2009 when the swine flu was raging, you know, through all the countries. You might remember all the dead bodies we had back then even, you know. So, and it reminded me of that. And it was like when they came up with vaccines so quickly, and the German government, they ordered back then 50 million doses. And the only difference from then to back then was actually back then the media did their job and they questioned. It was like, wait a minute, how could you come up with a vaccine this quickly? It's insane, you know. So there was quite a controversy about these, you know, so-called vaccines. And the government ended up, German government ended up destroying most of these vaccines because people said, what? Yeah, the newspaper is right when they question, you know, the safety of that vaccine. So, but it reminded me of that. And this time, however, they were, you know, way more clever to go about doing things. And they just continued and they would not stop. So I went out of that whole narrative of COVID, this deadly pandemic, and, you know, we have to do this, that, and the other. I left that path Easter 2020. So, you know, April 2020, because by that time there were so many things that I'd been told by my television that did not add up, you know. So, yeah, and it was just as they kept going and as they kept increasing the pressure on the people and the stigmatization of the people and the ostracism and, you know, labeling scientists who had a different view and would present that as conspiracy theorists and all of this, that to me was the whole picture of what a totalitarian regime would do if they wanted to get total control of the people. So, and you know, to me, it was just a matter of time, and they would overplay their hand to an extent that so many people will realize what is really going on, you know? So I tried to do whatever I could. I mean, I never wore a mask, and I mean, I never got, you know, the stupid mRNA shot. How am I still even alive? That's the question, you know, because according to my health minister, I was supposed to be the dead at the latest March of 22, you know, and here I am. So, I mean, seriously, but like I said, things did not add up. And when you really look at things, this is exactly, like I said, the mechanisms of trying to erect a totalitarian regime to totally control people. This is exactly what you would do. And I would have hoped, as a German in particular, I would have hoped that people actually had learned their lesson. But the ones screaming loudest, never again, are exactly those who marched right up front. They were leading the parade of ostracism, of discrediting people. I mean, so like I said, it's really astonishing to me that people would not, you know, catch on to that. By the way, and in terms of that, there is a book by Matthias Desmet, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, which I can absolutely recommend because he really lays it out. And you would think that people, that would be common knowledge by now, but unfortunately it's not. So where are we at now? well, they tried to do anything. There was never a vaccine mandate, but they were threatening to mandate these vaccinations. And that in and of itself, once again, led to a lot of people just, you know, getting this shot. Our Secretary of Health, he's a lunatic, in my book. Utterly ridiculous. He kept warning about, you know, super killer variants and we're all going to be dead, you know. So, but things have died down now. There are so many people that actually have woken up because they were just out in the streets because they did not agree with these restrictions. And now they found themselves being called Nazis And that's a regular scheme here in Germany, you know. I mean, it's been going on for decades. So if you were skeptical of EU, you were a Nazi. If you were skeptical of the euro, you were a Nazi. If you did not want mass migration from, you know, illiterate people, basically, no education, no nothing. If you didn't want, you were a Nazi. And now there were people, and, you know, from the structure, the people actually joining these protests against these restrictions, there was a large number of people that actually came from the left and the green kind of sphere. And now they were suddenly Nazis too, you know, and that woke a lot of people up, and a lot of people could think, well, wait a minute, that's what they've been saying about, you know, Euroskeptics, about EU skeptics, about immigration. They're all, we are Nazis now too. So they overplayed, once again, they overplayed their hand. And, you know, this accusation, oh, you are a Nazi. They played it so many times, it no longer works. And that's the good part about it.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think they can't help but overplay their hand, can they? Right, Christine, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back straight after to pick up where we left off.
Let's get rid of 7 billion people? Did Jane Goodall really say that at the World Economic Forum?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Jane Goodall, who made famous as an environmentalist who lived among the chimpanzees observing their behavior, may have spent too much time with the chimps, as she's now very anti-human. Here is Jane Goodall at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
We cannot hide away from human population growth because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
That's right. If you go back 500 years, you get a world population of about 1 billion people, or 7 billion less than our current number. Maybe if humans could live among the chimpanzees, we could reduce our carbon footprint. You've heard of the movement called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, profiled by the New Yorker magazine? Well, perhaps we're fast approaching the day when the word voluntary may be removed from the group's title. This is Mark Morano for TNT Radio and the Morano Minute.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police, fire, ambulance.
I could see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town.
Yeah, there it is. I can see flames. It appears to be a kid or something at the window.
Yes, okay.
You guys are better out. Serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
Email leaks reveal Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs was in regular communication with Twitter, telling them who to censor.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report. And on the line, I have Christine Anderson. And we've been talking about many things. One of the things I'd just like to say, though, is freedom is never won. There's never a point, is there, Christine, where you just say, right, we've done it. We've got our freedom. Freedom is something that you fight for, and we need to continue doing it. Now, one of the attacks on freedom, I believe, over the last few years, and we're seeing it intensifying at the moment, and I know you've got a view on this, Christine, is critical identity theory, where basically it's like the old divide and conquer, apart from it's a bit more sophisticated, because lots of little boxes are created. Each box, you put people in, you tell them what their identity is, and then you tell them how they're different from every other little box and how the other boxes are trying to suppress them. Is this going on in Germany at the moment? And what's your experience and what's your thoughts on this, Christine?
Oh, boy, is it ever going on in Germany? I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is like I just came out of a FUM committee, which is the committee here in the EU Parliament for, you know, equal rights for men and women and, you know, gender equality. Yeah, I mean, this whole thing about identity politics, it is not looking at people as human beings. and what their needs are. They're dividing them up in, you know, these different identity, you know, groups. And not only that, they're being dictated to. You are, you know, of this, or you belong to this identity group. And then I figured out, okay, if we do that, but we have, you know, this intersectionality. I mean, so you have an oppressed group, let's say black people. Okay, they're oppressed. But what if this black person is also a female? Then she is, you know, twice as much as oppressed as, let's say, a black guy. So now what if this black person was not only female, but was also, you know, lesbian? So, you know, they keep adding these means of oppression onto these people. And I have spoken to so many people from these so-called marginalized groups, and they don't even want it. They're being dictated to, that they're being marginalized. And they're being, you know, if they're asked, do you feel, you know, discriminated against or oppressed? And no, not really. Then they are confronted with reasons, but you should feel oppressed. Because, you know, so it's like this whole shebang, and it's really gotten way out of hand. So, but what they're actually doing by doing that is they're once again reducing people to the color of their skin, you know, to their biological sex. And I do distinctly remember there was this guy, I think it was Martin Luther King. He once held this epic speech about having a dream. And in it, he said, I dream of a nation where a man is not judged by the color of his skin, but by, you know, the merits or on the merits of his character. And now we are overturning all of that. So if you are, you know, talking about, yeah, we should become a colorblind nation, because that's actually what Martin Luther King was getting at that point, that is now considered a racial slur. Seriously? I mean, I would like to judge people by their character. I don't care if they're black, blue, yellow, green, whatever. I really don't care. But now, once again, they're being divided up in, you know, these different categories. And they're proclaiming they're actually helping the oppressed. And no, that's not exactly my point of view. They're reiterating the differences that we had hoped to overcome with the speech of Martin Luther King. We're right back where we started.
Yeah, I mean, we're going backwards, aren't we? I mean, if we want people to live in harmony, then we should be talking about what we've all got in common, not what makes us different. And I was listening, I was watching a psychology experiment the other day, and I forget the psychologist who ran it, but basically what they did is they took a load of people and they used makeup to put a scar on their face. Okay, they showed them in the mirror this scar, and they were going to send them in for a job interview to see if they faced any discrimination. But what they did is they took away the mirror and they said, right, okay, we're just going to touch up the makeup again. And they took away the scar before they went in. And what they did is, after they'd been through this interview, they spoke to them afterwards to find out if they were discriminated against. And all of these people picked up on all of these points in the interview where they felt that they were being discriminated against because of this scar, which wasn't there anymore on their face. And I think the lesson from that is, if you tell people that they are victims,
yeah,
and you tell people that they're being oppressed, then they will look for it everywhere and they will see it in places where it doesn't exist. I think that's a really, really important lesson there. The other thing is obviously sport as well. And I saw, and obviously lavatories have been a contentious topic. I saw a photo, I think it was on social media the day, which really illustrates this point. There were two lavatories. One of them was for men, and the other one was for men and everybody else. I mean, this seems to be, we seem to be going backwards in terms of, women's rights and equality of the sexes, don't we?
Yeah. I know. And that very good point. I mean, you know, the women's movement, the fight for equal rights for women, you know, what was it all about? To not emphasize, you know, the biological sex, because once again, you know, judge someone, you know, by what he can achieve, what, you know, is his intelligence, his character. But what we are seeing now is actually, once again, the eradication of women. I mean, just think. I mean, there was a Supreme Court appointee, and she was not capable of the simple question, define woman. I mean, if you cannot define woman anymore, and I'm pretty sure you can ask any three-year-old, they would be able to define what a woman is. But that just goes to show. The answer is, you know, pretty clear cut, as far as I'm concerned. If a woman is an adult human female, point blank. So there is nothing, you know. But why do they consider it to be so hard to define what a woman is? That is exactly the consequence of a cognitive dissonance. And they're displaying it at any given time. I mean, you ask a woman, could you please define what a woman is? And she babbles around and mumbles around. And, you know, the best she can come up with is, oh, I'm not a biologist. Really? That is the proof. Her cognitive dissonance has progressed to an extent that she cannot even answer a simple question as what, can you please define what a woman is? So it's a cognitive dissonance, and that is a serious issue. And it just goes to show they perfectly know what a woman is. They just no longer dare to say it. And to me, that is just another way of, once again, erasing women. And when you look at, you know, professional sports, I mean, it has been, you know, up until recently, it was frowned upon to beat up on a woman. But now, you know, you can do it with a lot of applause in public, you know, and beat them to an extent that they have to be hospitalized. Why? Because it's boxing or whatever. And there is just someone, you know, biological male claiming to be a woman. And once again, he is beating up on a woman in public. Under huge applause, he's been praised for it, you know, and gosh, things have gone so wrong. It's madness. It's really
yeah,
madness.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think the people, and I think you're right, what you said earlier about the fact that a lot of the people in these communities, whether you're trans or whatever, their whole thing has been hijacked by these activists. And I think it's being funded by very, very powerful people. And they don't believe this nonsense. What they're doing is trying to distract us all, get us all fighting amongst each other so that we don't unify and fight them together. And the media, of course, is complicit in this. And this is the thing I want to talk about next, Christine. We've only got about 3 minutes, so we need to be brief. But, you know, Germany, the Nazis came to power using propaganda in the media. You know, what do people in Germany make? Because surely people are waking up now to the lies they've been told.
Well, unfortunately, the people are not waking up in the numbers that I would have expected. They simply fail to see the parallels, you know, because they consider, well, it's a democratically elected government and they would never do, you know, bad things to the people. I mean, they're Democrats after all. So, and nowadays they have, like I said, become quite clever about it. They are, you know, selling themselves. We are the Democrats. We are the good guys. But, you know, totalitarianism, the goal, I mean, that's not the issue. You cannot recognize totalitarianism by looking at what goals they are trying to achieve. The only way you can identify totalitarianism is by looking at what means do they apply and what actions do they take to achieve these, you know, whatever whatever good goals they're dreaming of. It's the means that apply, that defines what totalitarianism is. And unfortunately, people, once again, fail to see the mechanisms applied to achieve a certain goal. But that's what they need to look at in order to recognize totalitarianism.
Yeah, and what are you doing personally, Christine, to try and wake people up in Germany? Because I know you obviously you're in the European Parliament, but what do you do in Germany to try and wake people up?
Well, you know what, I do just, you know, usual things, like, you know, whenever I'm out shopping or, you know, stand in the line at the cash register, I just, you know, comment on something, you know, just kind of, you know, getting into conversation, but I'm not too pushy about it. I just raise a question about it. So to get people to think about things, you know, rather than telling them what to think.
Well, Christine, look, I could talk to you for 3 hours on here. I'm honored that you would come on the show with me. Listen, keep on doing what you're doing. And if you do find yourself on a battle on that hill that you're going to die on, give me a call because I will come and die on that hill with you. Thank you so much. My name is James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio. Listen back because we've got another great show after the news headlines.